If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Extra time.
Hello and welcome back to the Extra Time podcast. It's me, your host, Patrick Van Straten, and this week I'm joined by Joe Tomlinson. How are you, Joe?
Do you know what? I'm not too bad. I had a good weekend of sport. I've actually had a few good, consistent weekends of sport where England have won the rugby, Exeter Chiefs have won the rugby, and Manchester United have won the football, which means that I'm due some absolute misery. So I'm not looking forward to Tuesday's game against Leipzig.
Yeah, that's the weird thing about Christmas, I think. Like, you're always really excited for there to be football on Boxing Day because there's never anything to do on Boxing Day, but it can completely ruin your mood after the high of Christmas.
Oh, mate. Every time. And the worst thing about this one year is going to be, I think United play on the 23rd, 26th and 28th.
Ooh.
So I'm guaranteed a misery at some stage.
Yeah, I think we've got Chelsea on Boxing Day. We've definitely got City before Christmas. And I assume that now Thomas Partey will be out for most of it. So it's going to be a super fun period. And obviously fans back in stadiums as well could get a little bit toxic.
Yeah, definitely. Although it was good to see fans back in stadiums this weekend, wasn't it? It felt like a proper relief seeing or hearing actual fan noise, other than the shambles, of course, that happened down at Millwall. But I have to say, like, actual fans, real fans being in stadiums of the Premier League and not having to listen to the artificial "ooh" when it fires 10 yards wide 5 seconds after it's happened was glorious.
Yeah, though it obviously made the experience pretty painful for some fans the weekend they came back on. For instance, West Ham fans who must have been expecting that they were going to have a good afternoon during the first half of West Ham's game against Man United. I thought they were incredibly dominant in that half. They had 12 shots to United's 3. I think at half time, the XG was 2.1 for West Ham to 0.1 for Man United. But Man United pulled off a brilliant comeback win. They're up to 5th in the table now after that 3-1 victory. 5 points off top with a game in hand. How do you feel about the performance? I mean, I think we'll probably agree on what changed it.
Yeah, I mean, split personality disorder for Manchester United at the weekend. Deary me, that first 45 was an absolute fiasco. But it's not the first time it's been a fiasco for Manchester United in the first 45 minutes of a game, to be totally honest with you. We've done that consistently away from home this season. We've won 5 games away from home in a row, been fucking comebacks. Like, we've been behind in all 5 of them at some stage, come back and won the game, which is both glorious to watch because it's always good to watch a comeback for your side, but also painful because the first half of these games, United are so slow getting out the blocks. It needs the opposition to score a goal before any some real fighting spirit, which is a bit of a shame. And at the weekend, I think Ollie was hoping he was going to be able to rest Bruno, hoping he was going to be able to rest Marcus Rashford for this really important game on Tuesday against Leipzig. And the team he put out in that first 45 minutes should be performing better than we saw in that first 45 minutes. You know, a midfield that could contain Van der Beek and Paul Pogba couldn't pass the ball. I don't know what was going on. They had no interest in keeping possession and just settling the game down when we were struggling and maintaining a bit of game management. The forward line couldn't keep hold of the ball. It was bouncing off Martial like a trampoline. Cavani was trying all these flicks around the corner. Tactically, technically, we were awful for 45 minutes. And then, yeah, I mean, Bruno comes on and does what Bruno does. Not only is he key for chance creation and leading the press for United, but he also demands more from players. If somebody doesn't give him a good enough ball to feet, he absolutely hammers him. And in the first 45 minutes, we missed that. There was nobody holding each other accountable. So yeah, thank God for Bruno. But also, I feel like because Bruno is flying, Rashford's kind of under the radar as to actually how brilliant Marcus Rashford is now. The runs off the ball are so exceptional. Even the chance he hits the post with where Bruno kind of slips him down through the middle, yes, he misses the chance, but nobody in the first half was getting into those areas. And his output over the last sort of season and a half, I think it's 20 goals and 11 assists in 40-odd games. And it's up there with you know, like your Sterlings, your Manes. Obviously, he's got a few, couple of penalties in that time as well, but he's getting better and better, and he's definitely one of the most exciting young wide players in world football at the moment.
Yeah, I think when you consider that he's like 5 years younger than someone like Heung-min Son, who I think we all agree is a world-class wide forward, then it seems not only reasonable but actually probable that he'll reach that level. And I don't think he's that far off it now. I mean, in this game, you're absolutely right. Everybody looked better in the second half. Like, I was looking in the Football Daily group chat in the first half and seeing some of the comments about Pogba. Yeah. But, I mean, the goal he scored in this game has to go down as one of the best. And while it will be considered a Bruno Fernandes assist, I mean, Pogba does do all the work. It's a side foot finish from 30 yards out.
Like, Pogba, this is what's really frustrating about Pogba for Manchester United fans, isn't it? Is that, you know, he has that in his locker, that's the ability to change a game in a single moment, but doesn't show it regularly enough. Where Pogba struggles is that he's trying to do things in the wrong areas. It's all well and good doing the flicks and tricks and where he pins defenders with that wide arm position and can kind of spin them on the edge of their box. Looks brilliant, comes off loads. And when he's in the 10 role, it does actually work. When he's on the edge of his own box doing that, you don't want to see it. And you don't want to see him trying to challenge people in his own area. There was a moment where he went for an overhead kick and it was very, very rogue. It's just a shame for Pogba because it doesn't seem to be able to put those 45 minutes together consistently enough. And maybe that's down to Corona. You know, I heard him talking after the game about how hard it actually was to recover from having COVID, that he couldn't breathe on the pitch and stuff. So I'll give him a little bit of leeway for that, but just a total lack of inconsistency. And it felt like it took Bruno Fernandes to come on, take all of the spotlight off of him. As soon as Bruno came on, West Ham was suddenly like, oh no, we're in trouble here. We're going backwards a lot. For Pogba to be able to thrive when it was backs against the wall stuff, that's when you see Pogba struggling.
Yeah, it obviously gave space for players to do what they do best. You know, allowed Pogba a little bit more freedom, allowed Rashford to run in behind, because obviously he had a couple of times running through before he eventually got that goal. And Mata as well obviously had more space to play a couple of those excellent through balls too. But Bruno Fernandes, 8 chances created in 45 minutes on the pitch. Now 11 goal involvements for the season. The rest of the team has just 8 without him, which is pretty remarkable, though I'd say that's more a sign of how good Bruno's been rather than a criticism of the rest of the side. I guess the interesting thing about this game is I wonder if it makes... Does it make you more confident or less confident about this United side? Because, look, they came back from 2-0 down against Southampton. They came back in this game. But it also feels that if West Ham had got another before half-time, it would have been much more difficult because they'd have probably moised it up in the second half.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were still outshot in this game. West Ham still produced more expected goals. It just feels a little bit like, as good as they are when Bruno Fernandes is on the pitch and when Rashford is firing, there is a weakness there.
Oh, there's for sure weakness there. And let's have it right. United are all over the place defensively. Very, very good individual players going forward, which often bail them out of games in a Marcus Rashford. You know, Cavani did it against Southampton. Bruno pretty much does it every single week. But I do want to come back to the fact that, you know, people can criticise Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, and rightly so, quite a lot of the time. I do agree with you guys that tactically, sometimes, not the best. But you very rarely see people coming out in praise of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and his tactical decision-making. The last 2 Premier League games against Southampton, won by substitutes, really. Edinson Cavani gets bought on, wins Manchester United the game from half-time, scores 2 goals. Total game-changing substitution. Against West Ham on the weekend, brings Bruno and Rashford on, mixes up the system, allows Rashford to play a little bit more centrally, and totally changes the game. We come back to win 3-1. So I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer firstly needs a little bit more praise for what I think is an improving decision-making kind of system off the bench. Yes, I know he should have taken Fred off midweek, but it is what it is. I do think he's getting better at that, because arguments last year, he was terrible at making substitutions. This year, he's got it right more than he's got it wrong. But I do agree with you. There's lots of fragilities, and it will... I maintain the fact that comes down to recruitment. I think United had to sign a centre-back and a defensive midfielder this summer. We signed neither. Anybody who watches Manchester United knows how lopsided they are. There's never an attack down the right-hand side, ever. At times on the weekend, you could literally see West Ham's plan of let Wan-Bissaka have it out there, because there's not a single person in front of him who's going to make the run down the wing. And I feel like Ollie is kind of doing a bit of a bodge job of playing players in roles they don't necessarily fit, particularly in that defensive midfield position. Is Scott McTominay a natural defensive midfielder? Not too sure. Is he one that can play there by himself? Definitely not, in my opinion. So I think he's not been helped by poor recruitment, and he's kind of bumbling his way through, and he's getting results thanks to some individual brilliance at the moment. But at the back, I am concerned, because Telles has come in, has not hit to the ground running. Let's put it fairly mildly. I think Shaw, when he's fit, will be straight back in that side. Aaron Wan-Bissaka consistently bails us out of dodgy positions. And I actually think Dean Henderson's looked pretty good when he's played games. So it's not for want of trying, but the defensive system can be a bit calamitous at times.
Yeah, well, I think we're intrigued to see where they end up this season. But on the positive side, obviously, it has been inconsistent so far, and they're still very much within touching distance of not only the top four, but really the leaders of the table. So who knows where they could end up this season.
Since Christmas, I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has taken the second highest points of any manager in the Premier League. So, like, we have been inconsistent, but when we find runs of form, United tend to go on big bursts, you know, like 14 games unbeaten or so. And that will effectively be the difference between a Champions League qualifying side and not this season. Whoever can put together a 10 to 14 game winning run or non-losing run will effectively guarantee themselves Champions League football, because the tally will be like 65 points again.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Okay, so that's Man United dealt with. And before we move on to Barcelona, a quick word from our sponsors, who are Manscaped. If you're looking for the ultimate stocking stuffers for this holiday season, look no further than Manscaped, who have the tools to make you win this year's Secret Santa competition. They're the only brand dedicated to below-the-waist grooming and hygiene products. And great news for everyone, they've just released their products across Europe, Canada, and Australia. Now, obviously, we've talked about this before, probably in greater detail than you might want. But a few of their products would make really nice stocking stuffers this season. They've obviously got their crop preserver, ball deodorant, which I feel the appeal and uses of that should be obvious to you. They've got crop reviver ball toner, a spray-on toner that will give your balls a little slice of heaven. That's in the copy, with their aloe vera and hazel extracts. They've got body wash, which you can also use on your hair. Ball wipes, in case you are in some sort of emergency that I don't really want to go into too much. Foot duster, foot deodorant, and of course, the Shears 2.0 luxury four-piece nail kit. But what they're really known for, this is what we talked about in the past. They've got their weed whacker. That's their nose and ear hair trimmer. Uses skin-safe technology to get rid of those nasty hairs without doing you a horrible injury in the process. And the Lawnmower 3.0 trimmer, which has a replaceable ceramic blade with skin-safe technology once again. And to be clear, all of their washing materials, all of their lotions are vegan, cruelty-free, dye-free, sulfate-free, paraben-free. So if you do have sensitive skin or any concerns about ethics, then they are going to match up with what you want. You can get 20% off and free shipping if you go to manscaped.com and use the code EXTRATIME, all one word, all caps. So if you're looking for something special this festive season, head over to Manscaped and use the code EXTRATIME for 20% off and free shipping. It'll be something that a man in your life or you yourself will definitely use, and it's almost sure to get a laugh as well. So head over to Manscaped to check out that deal. Well, from one team who were able to pull themselves out of trouble this weekend to another who keeps sinking further into it, it's Barcelona who played Cadiz this weekend and lost to them for the first time since 1991 to fall to ninth in the table. Joe,
yeah.
Did you catch the highlights of this game or even the full game? I'm assuming you didn't, because why would you watch Barcelona play Cadiz? Pretty embarrassing performance from Barca, I thought.
I didn't watch the full game, I'll admit it, but I've seen both the highlights and I've seen the Twitter conversation around it. I mean, Barcelona are as much in the mud as a super club can be right now. I think his name's Carles Tusquets, the interim president, isn't it, at the moment? I saw his interview midweek where he was saying, look, €300 million loss this year. Players, I think, have had the salaries suspended to the tune of €160 million at the moment as well, which is not great. I saw Messi had 10 shots on the weekend, didn't he? Which 10 shots pretty much sums Lionel Messi up. He's just tired of having to play with the rest of the players around him. He's like, give me the ball. I'm just going to shoot from wherever I can and whenever I can. And I also saw Neymar midweek saying, no, I'd like to play with Messi next season. So I think the writing is on the wall, both for Messi leaving Barcelona. I think the club is in absolute ruins that nobody can pull them out of right now. And I don't think Ronald Koeman should still be in a job. But equally, what's the point in sacking Ronald Koeman when there's going to be a presidential election in, is it February now? They've moved it forward to March? Whenever.
Yeah, I think so.
Just wait for that now. Sack Koeman when that time comes around. Appoint probably Pochettino or Tuchel if he's out of a job at that stage, and then move on. Because at the moment, the club's an absolute disgrace.
Yeah, I mean, you'd expect at least that, like, you can understand them not having, like, the best attack in Europe, despite Messi, you know, because of other personnel trying to fit them in. And you could understand them not having, you know, a world-class defence, but they should at least be better than this. They should be able to lock it down with the players that they have and comfortably grind out results against teams like Cadiz. I mean, in this game, they only allowed 7 shots, but, oh my God, there were so many big chances. Like, the highlights are just Cadiz running away from them, like, constantly. Like, Barca had 82% possession. Apparently, they've only had more possession in a La Liga game twice in the last 13 seasons. But the goals they gave up were just absolutely calamitous. Obviously, gave one up in the seventh minute. And then Negredo's goal, which proved to be the winner in the second half. 35-year-old Negredo. He runs in to press Longley. Longley kind of half misses the ball and half leaves it. Ter Stegen comes out to try and make a tackle, and Negredo is just able to slot into an empty net. And it's just, I don't really understand how Barcelona aren't at least, you know, kind of, if they were like the third best side in La Liga, that would be a bad season for them. But right now, expected points put them eighth in the table.
Mad. That's mad.
You know, Messi's form is not good, man. Like, I mean, obviously he's still an incredible player, but this season, he's averaging 0.82 expected goals and assists per 90 minutes, which, to be clear, is world class. But it's down. But it's down like a quarter on his previous worst season, which was last season. And I don't know if that's age finally biting. I don't know if that's the team being completely out of sorts. But they're just all over the place, man. It's really, really worrying that Barcelona are just not capable of creating big chances anymore.
Yeah, and like, you look at the team that they put out against Cadiz, though, and it's a team that should be beating Cadiz. Let's have it absolutely right. I know that Martin Braithwaite started up front, and the young Abingueta started at the back, didn't he? But the rest of the team out there, more than capable of beating Cadiz. And Lionel Messi, look, his attitude right now, personally, must be a little bit like, I'm done with the club. If he would obviously never come out and say that publicly, but you've seen the training ground footage where he looks pretty irritated. He looks pretty irritated on match days, to be honest with you. And it comes back to the question, do you think they now regret? Because he's definitely going to leave in the summer with this current attitude, this current regime being under Koeman, the way they're playing. There's in my head, zero 50% chance of him staying at Barcelona right now. So do you think Barcelona now look at this and think, should we have taken 50 to 100 million euros, sold into Man City, got 80 million euros off the books, whatever his yearly salary is at the moment, and then look to reinvest that elsewhere, also pay off a lot of our debts and maybe not make that black hole look a little bit more feasible? Because like Tusquets must now be looking at it. I'm sure in that interview he also said it would have been desirable to sell Messi or something like that. And he must now look at that and think, if we'd have let Messi go, we probably would still be mid-table. And we'd, do you know what I mean? Like, it now for me is so confusing from a Barcelona fan's perspective, that Lionel Messi situation, because I think he's going to leave in the summer.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I mean, in the summer, I remember saying that I thought that they should maybe sell him.
Yeah. And we battered you. I'm not going to lie. I battered you for that. And now I look back at it and I think, well, maybe you're right, Pato.
Well, you say that, but I mean, Messi could easily go on like a 10-goal run over Christmas and they're back in the Champions League places. Mm. And if Messi proves to be the difference between them finishing out of Europe and in the Champions League spots, it probably will have been worth keeping him, because we don't know how much they'd have got for him in the summer. But I've said this before, but in a way, it's Arsenal's problems, you know, writ large. Like, you're committing so much money to a player who is admittedly your best player. By a long way, he's your best player. But Barcelona just do not have... I'm just not convinced they have the resources to start building a new side right now. They can't shift Coutinho. They can't shift Griezmann. Ousmane Dembele seems keen to stay, to be honest, and continue picking up his salary. They've brought in guys like Pedri and Trincao, who are promising, but they're promising. They're not even top level promising players, if that makes sense. You know, like Liverpool went out this summer and they were like, our player for the future is going to be Diogo Jota, who is good enough to contribute now and will get better. Barcelona's guys for the future are like 17-year-old Pedri or like Trincao coming out of the Portuguese league. And you think, is that the sort of promising for the future player that you want to have in your side? Like, it just seems to me like Barcelona need to go out and buy probably at least two world-class attackers next season,
and they like
over the next kind of year
and
a half.
They can't afford it at the
moment. Exactly. Yeah, that's a concern. And if they did, I mean, who would they go for? Because while they might be able to afford a player in the kind of 60 to 80 million range, maybe, if Messi gets off the books, they can't afford to go and buy Mbappe, can they?
No. And they can't afford to go and compete for Haaland, who, even if they could pay that buyout clause that becomes active in 2022, he must be looking at this situation and going, well, Barcelona are currently 3 points off relegation. Like, I'm going to have better offers on the table here. And surely we're not going to get to the case where Barcelona don't qualify for the Champions League. Because if that's the case, Ronald Koeman is going to be run out of town, let alone sacked. He might be chased out of town. I think there's so many issues at Barcelona. It's almost like you don't know where to start, because they pay too much on wages for below average players. They've got a manager who is all over the place. The presidential elections are all over the place. They're in massive debt. Like, the Nou Camp is quite literally crumbling. The stadium's all over the place. I think Barcelona this season are just in catastrophically disastrous areas, and there's no quick fix. There is genuinely no quick fix. But I wanted to ask you one thing, Pat. Did you see Neymar's quotes about Messi midweek?
No, I didn't. What, I knew that there was something about him kind of talking about the possibility of playing.
Yeah, he was like, oh, we've got to be playing with each other next season. I'm desperate to play with him next season, blah, blah, blah. Do you think, if you were Messi, would you be going City or PSG?
Probably City, because of the stability of the project. And also, I look at the way City are playing this season, and I actually think that there's quite a big Messi-shaped hole in the middle of it.
Yeah,
I think the way that they kind of want the striker to drop deep, the way that, you know, David Silva hasn't been perfectly replaced, it almost feels, and a few people have said this, it almost feels like they actually changed system in the expectation that Messi was going to be there, and now he isn't.
Yeah.
But also, I just think, we've talked about this before, I think Tuchel probably leaves.
I do.
And so if I were thinking about going to PSG, I'd probably want some assurances about who is coming in, and I'd probably want some assurances about Mbappe and Neymar's long-term future. But also, we've seen, there's been talk this weekend, right, that Mbappe might be talking to the club about a new deal. Mm. And if so, then that starts to feel like maybe there is something going on with Messi behind the scenes, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure Messi's sort of entourage are chatting to everybody at this stage. Let's have it right. Mm-hmm. Like, I would be surprised if it's just sort of PSG and Man City. There's probably chats going on with every major club in the world, because a player of Messi's calibre available on a free transfer never happens. So I tend to agree with you. I think not only the stability of the project, but also the allure of Pep, the reconnection of Pep, yeah. I think is probably the thing that pushes him over the line. And I also think that Man City will have put in place this summer a provisional package that could allow them to sign Messi. And next summer, when he's mm-hmm. definitely available for free, I think it's even more likely that package would get put forward to the player. I personally see Messi playing for Man City next season. I think if he is to be still a Barcelona player, you're going to have to see a world-class manager, like the whole team completely changed for him, and his wage to be increased again, which probably is unfeasible currently at Barcelona. So yeah, I think he'll be a Man City player next season, Pat.
And what do you think Barcelona can do? I mean, like, if you were to pick two good, because it just feels like if Messi goes, they're obviously going to get worse. Mm. And if they're getting worse from potentially, you know, let's be optimistic and say fourth or fifth, I don't know, like that's really quite troubling. And I don't know, like, if they need two attackers next summer, who could they feasibly try for?
Oh my word. Well, the thing is, I don't even know whether it's just attackers they need now, really. Like, the signing of Miralem Pjanic looks even more puzzling, doesn't it, given he just can't get a minute really from like any position at the moment. Like, I know he's played quite a few Champions League games from the off, but the Pjanic signing just seems so puzzling, because I bet he's on an absolute whopper of a wage there. In terms of forwards, I mean, they're going to go for Memphis Depay again in January, almost definitely, aren't they? And is he the man to solve the amount of issues Barcelona have? Almost definitely not. I would say there's probably two players in world football that could do that for them right now. And those two are like Mbappe and Haaland. And I don't think they can get hold of either of them. So I think it's going to be a case of lose Messi, get the right coach in, and just almost restart from ground zero, like a whole new sporting project at Barcelona.
I can't believe that this decade has ended this way for them, but you make enough stupid decisions, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, Ronald Koeman being your manager, currently the most stupid of the lot, because I just think Pochettino would be getting much better performance levels out of even this side, even though they are mediocre.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Well, Barcelona, it's kind of nice that a bigger club than Arsenal are in just as much trouble. That does actually like give me a little bit of happiness right now. But shall we actually move on to... We're not really going to talk about the North London derby, because to be honest, it's a bit of a non-event. You know, yeah. It's like Spurs are... I don't think Spurs are really going to compete for the title, but they are one of the better sides in the Premier League, and Arsenal are one of the worst sides in the Premier League. But there was an interesting conversation after the match, which was about this thing that Harry Kane is doing a lot of at the moment.
Yeah.
When a player goes up for a header, Harry Kane will often have a look at them, then back into their legs, take their legs out, and they fall to the ground. He did this yesterday against Gabriel, but to be honest, I didn't think that was the most egregious example. We've seen him do it this season against Adam Lallana. I think he got a penalty that time. Mm. He did it to Aaron Cresswell, which was one of the worst ones I saw. And quite often, he not only doesn't get penalised for it, he gets a free kick for it. And I understand that probably a lot of Spurs fans will say this is like crying after a bad result. But I mean, look, it's got nothing to do with the result. It wouldn't have changed a thing. But I do think that this is one of those things, like pushing a player into the hoardings, you know, when you're at the edge of the pitch, that seems quite dangerous to me, and probably there should be a rule against it. What do you think?
Yeah. Firstly, I don't think it's malicious from Kane. Like, I don't think he's thinking before the game, I'm going to go out
there to
do this.
I think it's cynical.
I think what it is, yeah, effectively it is very, very cynical. But I also think that the punishment shouldn't be like a red card. I don't think it's like a red card offence.
Oh, no.
I think
no.
It's just something that referees need to have a look at and go, okay, this is clearly what Kane's doing. We just need to start penalising him for doing that, and that it'll quickly stop, because at the moment, because he's winning free kicks, he's winning penalties, he will continue to do it until a decision goes against him in one of those moments. It's obviously very dangerous. Like I've said it before, you can't do it in rugby, and if you can't do something in rugby, yes, then you probably shouldn't be allowed to do it in football. So yeah, he just needs to penalise it, maybe a yellow card, because at the end of the day, if he does it one more time and somebody lands on their neck, we're going to have a whole different conversation on our hands here, because it is dangerous.
Yeah, well, it's an easy way to like dislocate a shoulder or something. And I mean, it's not just about Kane. Like the issue goes beyond that, which is that if Kane does it and it's successful and he's not penalized for it, other players are going to realize that it's a successful tactic and start doing it more and more as well. And if we end up in this, and plus it's one of those things, isn't it, where quite often certain people in certain areas of the pitch are going to get certain calls. Like, I'm not just talking about like English players getting calls, though I think they do. I think Kane and Grealish in particular get a lot of calls. But it's more that, you know, that when you're a defender, for instance, defending a corner, you're quite likely to get a call if there's a bit of a 50-50 between you and an attacker. And I really, really worry about this becoming like a general thing. Like right now, it's not being penalised. And so what Kane's doing is technically, you know, within the rules. I'm not saying that Kane needs to be like sent off or banned or anything. I just think it needs to be made, like you say, really clear that it's not acceptable. Because yes, in rugby, challenging someone in the air is like known to be exceptionally dangerous, right? It's only allowed if there's a realistic chance that you could, that if you're actually trying to catch the ball.
Yeah.
And it's also illegal in Aussie rules football. I mean, like you say, look, if it's illegal in rugby, it should be illegal in football. If it's illegal in Aussie rules football, what does that tell you about how dirty it is?
Yeah, it's definitely something that needs to be addressed, but it's not something that's going to be addressed internally. Like, that's the sort of thing Jose Mourinho probably looks at and thinks, crucial to my side gaining points right now. Because the penalty against Brighton, for instance, has then scored... that's a big swing for Tottenham. And if the Gabriel incident, let's say, if that had been in the box of the, in like Arsenal's box, that could have been a big swing in the North London derby. So I don't think Jose Mourinho has probably criticised him. I think maybe it just takes the refereeing association just to go, okay, this is a new thing that's happening. We're just going to have to start penalising the attackers, because there's no attempt to go for the ball. It is effectively cynical foul play. And yeah, I think it deserves to be penalised.
Yeah, and I think that generally speaking, football needs to take a page out of sports like rugby's book in trying to keep players safe and thinking of player safety as a bigger goal. You know, like obviously the conversation around dementia at the moment, but pushing players into hoardings as well. The concussion protocols still don't seem to be universally applied. I mean, we saw this ridiculous... incident, you know, in the Arsenal Wolves game where David Luiz played the rest of the half before coming off, and they say he passed the concussion test at the side of the pitch, but he certainly didn't seem to be right. Even in the Arsenal game at the weekend, actually, you know, you had Mikel Arteta kind of pushing Thomas Partey back onto the pitch after he clearly aggravated a thigh injury. So it just seems like,
yeah, I mean,
the Football Association and players and teams have been cavalier about player safety for too long.
With the Partey situation, though, why on earth he doesn't just go down in the middle of the pitch?
Oh, I agree.
And, like, he's just beyond me. I couldn't believe the decision to kind of walk away from the action as Tottenham are mid counter attack with like Kane and Son bearing down on two poor defenders. But yeah, I do agree, especially with the concussion protocols, seriously need to be looked at. Just around. I would just take a real leaf out of Rugby Union's book. They go off for an HIA. If the head injury assessment is passed within the dressing room by an independent doctor, then they're allowed back onto the pitch and a concussion substitute is allowed on in his place while that's taking place. It seems very, very simple. Obviously, Arsenal have said that the concussion protocols were passed and the reason he missed the North London derby was the wound is quite a severe one for David Luiz, and I think they're worried about it splitting open when he heads the ball. But just have concussion substitutes, have head injury assessments, and follow what Rugby Union have done, because they were notoriously bad, Rugby Union, for head injury problems a few years ago, and now kind of lead the way in terms of British sport for concussion injuries. So I think they should just literally just go, okay, what's the RFU done? We'll just do.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do that.
Our last section today is to talk about some loanees from big clubs. Now, this season so far, there have been some interesting players who've been failing to get regular minutes for some of Europe's bigger sides, and they could be interesting pickups in the January window, given that we're still going to see clubs restricted by the financial losses made during the coronavirus crisis. So I've picked out three players, well, two players at big clubs and one player at Arsenal, who could potentially go out on loan in January after struggling 4 minutes this term. Mm-hmm. So let's start at Barcelona with Ricky Puig, who almost went out on loan in the summer. Ronald Koeman publicly said that he wanted Puig to go out on loan, but Puig chose to stay and compete 4 minutes. Well, so far, he's only had 56 across the league and Champions League. What do you think about Ricky Puig, Joe? Because he looks like a really good passer. He looks like a good dribbler. He's reasonably creative. He's capable of pressing really hard as well. It just seems like he'd be a good fit for a team who maybe play a midfield three and need a slightly more attacking player in there.
Yeah, it's a difficult one because I don't think he's going to come to... I would be surprised to see him join a Premier League club just because he is quite lightweight as well. And being so young, I think to uproot him from Spain now would be a little bit harsh on him maybe. So I would probably try and keep him internally within Spain. The issue Barcelona have with loaning him to any other Spanish club is everyone's a rival for them this year. It's not like you could send him, do you know what I mean, to like Villarreal and be like, oh, you know, he's going to pick up minutes. He's going to play in a fairly solid system. But they're not really going to be competition for a league title with us. This year, it's like, well, we're in competition for Champions League places with everyone. So I can't see it happening now. I don't think you'd be sent out alone in January. Definitely should have gone in the summer. And I would probably have sent him to either Italy or Germany, to be totally honest with you. I think they've seen some real success sending the likes of Hakimi out there, at least Real Madrid have recently. And I would probably have tried to do the same with Ricky Puig. You know, get him to a Gladbach or somewhere like that where he's really going to develop under a top-class young manager, probably get a lot of minutes in the midfield, rather than sending him to, you know, a Wolves where he's probably not going to get an awful lot of game time ahead of a João Moutinho when the chips are really down and Nuno needs to win games and it's going to be battlers in there that are going to... Like Ricky Puig, I wouldn't be sticking him straight into a Wolves team that are going to have to like fight and scrap to get wins because that's how they play. I think I'll be sending him to either Italy or Germany because you can't keep him internally within Spain.
Yeah, I mean, I know where you're coming from, and especially if he's only going to get half a season, you want him to adapt as quickly as possible so he gets the maximum amount of playing time. But I guess, you know, if he went to Everton and gave them a little bit of creativity off the bench, that would be kind of... That makes sense. And there you've got a Spanish-speaking coach. You know, you've got players like James Rodriguez and Jerry Mina, who obviously speak Spanish as well. Like, maybe that helps a little bit. I mean, even at RB Leipzig, you'd have Angelino and Dani Olmo. So, you know, those factors can help a player settle. I suppose as well, there are teams like Arsenal who need more creativity in the midfield. But yeah, you're right. I'm trying to think of managers outside Spain who... ideally speak Spanish and maybe have some Spanish speaking players just to make life a little bit easier for him. And it's really hard because, yeah, he can't go to Villarreal or something because Barca literally can't afford to strengthen those teams around them.
Bielsa, take him at Leeds.
That'd be interesting. Yeah. You know what? That would actually be a really interesting one.
That central midfield area, like there's so much pressure on Calvin Phillips to progress the ball. I know Puig and Phillips are very different players, but like every bit of progression Leeds do comes directly through Phillips, doesn't it? So I think it would be a decent secondary option to have Puig and someone else when Phillips is unavailable.
Oh, I like that. Okay, Ricky Puig to Leeds, sorted. Okay, let's move on to Real Madrid. Because we've got Martin Odegaard, who actually came back early from a two-year loan to Real Sociedad in the summer. He was expected to kind of be at the heart of this new Real Madrid project, but only has 360 league and Champions League minutes this term. This is an interesting one for me because I think Odegaard could actually find a home at quite a lot of interesting places. To me, he's a higher level prospect than Puig. What do you think of his performances so far this season, Joe? Like, why do you think that he's not really getting the minutes that we thought he would? Because it seemed like quite a big statement of confidence in his ability that he was brought back early from this loan.
Yeah, I mean, brought back early, and I think he has been unlucky with injury. We should say that firstly. Obviously, I think he missed 6 weeks, didn't he, or 6 games with an injury. So his arrival at Real Madrid, you were kind of expecting him to hit the ground running. If Zidane's brought him back early, it means that he's finally going to give minutes to a youngster rather than one of the old guard that's had his trust for 3 or 4 years and he knows exactly what he's going to get out of him. And I thought that even more so when James left the club. I thought, okay, James is out. Maybe this allows Martin to start nearly every game for Real Madrid. Then he picks up the injury and then you think, oh no, is it going to be his season in and out of the side? I don't think he'll go on loan because he's going to be vital for, I think, a Champions League and a league push. Without a Martin Odegaard, I feel like they're a little bit short in that 10 space for multiple fronts. So I don't think he'll go out on loan now. I think if he'd have gone out on loan in the summer, he would have been the ideal player for an Arsenal who need a creative player who can press, very progressive as well. I think over 7 progressive passes a game last season at Sociedad. I love Martin Odegaard. And I do think he'll gradually find his way into this Real Madrid team just because the rest of the players that can play in that 10 space feel like they're in decline. So I think that's what will happen and he won't go out on loan, sadly, as long as he can stay injury free.
I would generally agree with you because I do think that, you know, they like him there. And yes, he has had these injuries which have kept him out of the side. All his numbers are down at the moment. Which is a little bit troubling. And I mean substantially down. Like last season, he was passing into the penalty area 2.5 times a game, which is an elite level. Yeah. And this season, it's 0.8. And dribbles are down from 2.2 to 0.4. Pressures down from 18 a game to 12. And really, the thing that troubles me more than anything else have been that we've heard some pretty persistent rumours recently about Real Madrid having an interest in Dominic Szoboszlai. Mm. Now, obviously, I don't know how serious that is. I still kind of expect Szoboszlai to go to Leipzig. But if Real Madrid did make a play for him, it does feel like guys like Vinicius Junior, Rodrigo and Odegaard would start to think, well, hang on, what is your plan for me here?
Yeah, it's a really difficult one, isn't it? Because I feel like Szoboszlai is being linked to every top club in Europe, but is guaranteed to go to Leipzig. Like, do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it feels like we're hearing him linked to Spurs, we're hearing him to Madrid, we're hearing him to Arsenal. He's got the 25 million euro buyout clause. I think it's all got to be paid up front. Then there's a 20% sell-on fee. And whenever I hear that sort of, 20% sell-on fee of any future overall sale. So, you know, if they sold him for 100, they'd give 20% of that 100, not of the profit. And I just feel like, that's nailed on then to go to Leipzig because that'll keep it within the Red Bull group. I just think he's going to end up at Leipzig, Odegaard to stay, and Arsenal to have to look at a slightly different kind of player in that attacking midfield role. I'll throw a name your way, Pat, just very briefly.
Okay.
That I think is more realistic for the player Arsenal will target is somebody like Calhanoglu, who's out of contract in the summer and Arteta probably thinks can come in and have an immediate impact in some form of a push for Europe now. Because I think if it's a youngster that comes in, Arteta might be slightly worried that it's going to take him a year to get up to speed and his job will be out by then.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised, yes, if a similar thing happened. Like, Calhanoglu is actually having a pretty good season.
Massive and obviously of in the key past, passes, man.
Yeah, and in the past he was a pretty, you know, vigorous presser as well. Like he obviously was playing when he was playing in the Bundesliga, he would work extremely hard and was capable of committing to that kind of Schmidt press. I wouldn't be in favour of it, but I mean, my favourite choice was probably to try and loan somebody, you know, like a Puig or an Odegaard, and then try and buy outright Emiliano Buendia, which I know Norwich are not going to want to do in the middle of the season, but maybe you can offer them loans or something there, you know, just figure something out that will keep them happy. I think Buendia's probably, he's a good age. He's Premier League proven. He obviously is extremely hardworking. Like, he just seems like the right sort of signing to me. And obviously being able to play wide as well, you know, that would be great. I think that clearly Arsenal need that protection on the flanks too. That's what I would like to happen. What I think will happen is we'll make a bid for Szoboszlai. Szoboszlai will go to Leipzig. We'll express an interest in Buendia. Norwich will say, no, it's mid-season, fuck off. And we will end up trying to buy Christian Eriksen for 12 million euros and giving him a 200 grand a week contract until he's 32. That's what I think we'll do, because I just think we're more even than us looking lost on the pitch, more even than us failing to get the best out of the players at the club. We are bad at recruiting. We are bad at understanding what we need and what we can get out of players and how what a player can give now is kind of balanced out by what they can provide to the side in the long term. I just think that we're not a very intelligent club at the moment. And so I think we'll probably do the embarrassing, unintelligent thing. That's my take. Speaking of which, actually, should we move on to our final player who could go out on loan, which is William Saliba. Now, obviously, Arsenal's plans for William Saliba were disrupted last year by injury at Saint-Etienne and then by family tragedy after that. Then it was reported that he was going to stay with Arsenal. Then it was reported he was going to go back to Saint-Etienne. Then it was Arsenal were considering loaning him to a championship side. Then he ended up staying because the Saint-Etienne thing fell through. Now he apparently is likely to leave on loan in January, potentially to go back to Saint-Etienne. To me, this seems incredibly stupid, because sending him anywhere other than Saint-Etienne or Arsenal, I think, is a little bit silly, because he might as well either stay at Arsenal and learn the ropes in the side he's going to be in the long term, or go back to a place where he feels comfortable and safe. Mm. Those, to me, are the two sensible options. But I guess what I don't really understand is why you can't just give him a chance. Like, as far as I'm concerned, Arsenal's season is basically over. Like, I don't think Arsenal are going to win the Europa League. I don't think Arsenal are going to finish in the Europa League places in the Premier League. Mm. And it feels like in that case, you might as well give minutes to the young players in the squad. And is it really not the case that Saliba could do what Mustafi or Holding do? Like, it seems like he surely would be able to do that, because neither one of those is a great defender. He's more athletic. He's a better passer. He's better in the one-on-one, because, of course, he's played as a right back as well. So he's kind of OK dropping into that wide space. But now Arsenal, you know, according to David Ornstein, Arsenal want to bring in another centre back in January, which would give them 10 on the books. Smash. If you include Mavropanos, who's out alone at Stuttgart. What do you think about this? It just seems so silly from an insider's perspective.
I didn't understand why Saliba was left out of the Premier League squad list in the first place. Is there some sort of rule that because he's a certain age, he can just be bought in at any time, or is he not able to play a Premier League game at all this year? Do you know?
I don't think you have to register him in the Premier League because he is like 19 still. He wasn't registered in the Europa.
Yeah.
That to me was a bigger issue. Like, you have to register him in the Europa, and we didn't do that. And that seems to be a competition where he absolutely would have got minutes if we'd registered him. But you get to register your squad again in the January window.
Yeah.
So he could then move into the squad.
It's a weird one, because obviously he's had some terrible off the field times. So you've got to feel a little bit sorry for him. But I look at the centre-backs on the books at Arsenal and I think, like, how many of them actually have long-term futures at this club? And the answer is, like, Gabriel. Mm. Holding's done an okay job, and I actually think is a little bit underrated by some fans at times. Probably a good enough option for a bench spot. But there's no none of these players are going to actively improve over the next 2 years to put themselves in a position where you could go, they're going to be Arsenal centre-back in 2023. So why not have Saliba in the Premier League squad regularly, and just, you're 15th in the league anyway. Like, can it get any worse than this at the
exactly.
back? Like, why not just run him out and just go, okay, we're going to work on Gabriel and Saliba's relationship, partnership, and in the hope that in 2023 they are consistently playing together week in, week out, and have been for 2 years? Like, do we really see Gabriel and Holding playing together in 2023? Absolutely 0% chance that's going to be happening. And if it is happening, Arsenal will still be 15th. So I just think that he should have been in the squad list. If he is allowed to come into the squad list because of his age, then he should be in more squads, because he's like, not even spoken about, is he? And the idea of buying another centre-back, I think, is just never going to happen. Not while they've got 7 or 8 on the books at the moment.
Well, and you just think, you know, in order to get this kind of centre-back that you'd want to come in, you know, who's actually a top prospect and is going to come in and give them a boost now, it just seems like that's money... That's misdiagnosing Arsenal's problem. Yeah. Like, that would be money that would be better spent on a proper forward, because that's where Arsenal is seriously in need. Arsenal, over the next couple of seasons, need to buy, I would say, probably 2 elite forwards. You know, like, I think they... I'd be happy to imagine that Saka or Martinelli will turn into a regular player for Arsenal. We're obviously not going to shift Pepe, but Arsenal are going to need at least probably a wide player and a number 10 or a striker. They're going to need 2 out of 3 of those. And if we're talking about, you know, what's been rumoured at the moment, which is going and trying to buy Ibrahim or Konate or something, that's going to cost you 40 mil. And it just feels like for that money, assuming you could get him out of Leipzig, you'd be better off going and getting a forward. You'd be better off trying to get Nkunku off Leipzig instead. Just because that is what Arsenal need right now. And I don't think the defence is going to be amazing, but I think you can kind of shut up shop sufficiently if you can trust your attack to create things, but Arsenal simply can't at the moment.
Yeah, and I just don't understand the philosophy that's currently being used at Arsenal. Like, doesn't feel like it's going to be progressing youngsters. It doesn't feel like it gets the best out of the attack, and the defence is still mediocre. So I feel like there's so many failings going on at the club right now that signing another centre-back doesn't improve a single one of them. Like, the defence is still going to be average. It's still going to be sort of 6th place best defensive line in England at best. So why not try and get something out of an attack that is like 14th, 15th best in the league?
Yeah, well, we might see something new over the next few weeks. Obviously, Lacazette started at the number 10 spot in the last 2 games for Arsenal. In Arsenal's last 2 league games, they've recorded the 2nd highest pressing numbers in the Prem, whereas before that, they were certainly one of the least active pressing sides in the Prem. So it feels like maybe Arteta is thinking about different stuff, but there's only so much. While I think that Arteta is not doing a good job right now, I think we all agree that they need a significant talent upgrade in the front half of the pitch. So it needs to be a busy January if Arsenal hold any hopes of pulling away from a relegation battle. Because at the moment, I'm looking at the games over Christmas and thinking, how are we going to get to 40 points?
No, come on.
Which is fun. Yeah, well, we'll see. I mean, the good thing is every time West Brom or somebody lose at the moment, I think, right, okay, well, at least we won't finish 20th. Pretty demoralising times. But thank you very much for joining me on the show today,
no
Joe.
Worries, mate.
Is there anything that you'd like to plug before we wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, go watch We Need to Talk if you can. If you're watching this on YouTube, I kind of reacted to ESPN's top 100 footballers of 2020. The list is uninspiring, to say the least. But yeah, if you're listening to the podcast, just go and listen to more Extra Time episodes.
Cheers, man. Thank you very much. And thank you to you guys for listening or watching at home. Of course, if you want to make use of that Manscaped deal, head to manscaped.com and use the code Extra Time for 20% off and free shipping. And we will see you next time, or be listened to you by next time, wherever you find us. See you later. Bye.